Good morning. Today's daf and Sufas Mem Tes, where I'm Mem Chesem and Beis. We are less than halfway down the Amud. We're starting this morning with the word Shmuel. Shmuel Amar LeYerusha Sa. We are in the middle of a discussion. Let's quickly recap from yesterday. So we know that a woman enters into marriage, and here in Masechta Sufas, we're really focusing on the second stage of marriage. Second stage of marriage is where all the financial obligations have kicked in. And just a couple of days ago in the daf, I'm Mem Zion. So we started articulating exactly what those financial obligations are. When a husband and wife now are entering into the second stage of marriage. So now there are numerous zechuyos that he received, and there's also a number of obligations. I call them chovos, but again, they're obligations, they're responsibilities that he has, financial responsibilities that he has towards his wife. And so what exactly is going to be affecting the second stage of marriage? So it's chuppah. But even as I say chuppah, as we already pointed out, it's not perfectly clear in the Gemara what exactly that means, what is the mechanism that gets them into the second stage of marriage. But in other words, it's fine. It's even though we don't have an absolute precision in terms of describing chuppah, but we all know what it is. In other words, it's a chasna, right? It's a chasna. They're actually under a physical chuppah. They're under canopy. They're going to go into the yichud room. Again, various positions amongst the Rishonim, exactly what affects that second stage of marriage. But we all know the general idea. And then basically she's making the big move, and I mean that literally. In other words, for the last year, even though she's a married woman, but during Erisin she lived in her parents' house, and now she moves into her husband's house. Okay, good. So this is the second stage of marriage, and this is where everything is going to be kicking in. What we have discussed yesterday was the Mishnah. The Mishnah yesterday's daf, Amem Ches Amud Aleph, going into the Amud Beis. So the Mishnah describes an unusual transfer. And that is what's called Mesira. And that is that she was handed over. In other words, what happened was, and granted, it's not exactly the most romantic form of a chuppah, but basically she was being shipped over by the shlichim. Shluchei ha'av sent her over, and she was collected now either by the baal or the shluchei ha'baal. And so we're going to be calling this from this point going forward, that's called Mesira. And so what does Mesira do? So Mesira creates now his chayvos. The Mishnah, if I may, the Mishnah on the bottom, Mem Chesam and Aleph, had very strong language. La'olam hi b'rishus ha'av, ashi tikanes l'rishus ha'bal, l'nisuin. So she's always going to be in the domain of the father until she moves over to the husband. And then the Mishnah goes on from there. Masar av l'shulch ha'bal harei b'rishus ha'bal. Now, so with this Mesira, so the shluch ha'bal give her over to the the shluchei ha'av, or the father himself gives her over to the shluchei ha'baal. So that's it. Now she transfers over to the rishus ha'baal. Halach ha'av im shluchei ha'baal, o shalchu shluchei ha'av im shluchei ha'baal, harik rishus ha'av. But what if the father tags along? So then this mesira has not been completed. And then the Mishnah goes on to describe, masru shluchei ha'av li shluchei ha'baal, harik rishus ha'baal. And even if the exchange was done from agent to agent, so in other words, agents of the father hand over to agents of the husband. So, but that's called a mesira. And at that point in time, now she has entered into the second stage of marriage. So what we have been deliberating yesterday since the Mishnah, and we will continue to do so right now, is what kind of transfer are we making? In other words, I'll put it in simple terms, and then we'll see it in the Gemara. Are we talking about an absolutely full transfer, as if chuppah has occurred? Or are we talking about some sort of partial transfer? Okay. That's the question on the table. We're looking at this form of what's called Mesira, and what does that mean? Are they now as if chuppah has occurred, or something less than that? So yesterday's daf, so we went through the positions of Rav Asi. So So Rav Asi says that when we say, I'm sorry, let's start off with Rav. So Rav's of the position that Mesirasa Lakol, that Mesira creates a full transfer. In other words, now it's as if Chuppah has occurred. With notable exception to Truma, Rav Asi says, no, I'll go even further. I'll say it's even Afla Truma. In other words, but both according to Rav and Rav Asi, this Mesira is Chuppah equivalent. It's as if Chuppah has occurred. And the only hesitation that Rav has is that maybe at this point in time she can't eat truma. And we went and explained yesterday, go back to yesterday's daf for an explanation of why Rav and Rav Asi are arguing over whether or not she's entitled to eat truma. Okay, go back to yesterday's daf for that. So that's where the discussion started. So we are all set and we're ready to go. Shmuel. So now in the Gemara, Shmuel Amar Lirushasa. So Shmuel says, no, this is an extraordinarily limited form of chuppah. In fact, according to Shmuel, effectively, chuppah has not occurred yet. Because, well, so first we'll say it simply, because chuppah hasn't occurred yet. In other words, for chuppah to occur, so they have to be together under the chuppah at some form of a chasna in the yichud room. In other words, they have to be together. Mesira is insufficient, according to Shmuel. Aye, so then what about the Mishnah? Because the Mishnah certainly is talking about some form of transfer that occurs at Mesira. So he says the only thing is Yerushasa. Meaning to say that at this point in time, she's coming, and not only she's coming, but she's bearing gifts. Remember that what her father is doing is he's going to kickstart the marriage, and he's going to throw a whole bunch of assets into the marriage, what we call the Nedunya. And so the only thing that will be effected at Mesira, according to Shmuel, is that that Nedunya that was given to her, so that now has been transferred over to the husband. In that, in the event that she dies at this point in time, meaning anywhere post-Mesira, she dies, so he now is going to be in full acquisition of the Nedunya. That's it. But in other words, but Chuppah has not been achieved at this point in time. That's the only accomplishments of Mesira. So according to Shmuel, it's extraordinarily limited. So Reish Lakish Amar Luxuvasa. Reish Lakish is of the position that that what's going to be happening at Mesira, Ksuva is going to be happening at Mesira. Now, Ksuva, as we have already discussed time and again, that's a very vague term. It's an ambiguous term. Ksuva samaihi. So, di imesa yarisla. So, hainu dishmul. So, the Gemara says, okay. So, so that if she dies, he's going to inherit her. That's exactly what Shmuel says. Okay. So, am ravina, lamar, ksuva sa me acher. So the Gemara says, so Ravina says no. In other words, let's not interpret Reish Lakish that way, because had Reish Lakish meant that, Reish Lakish would have just simply said, I followed Shmuel. Okay. So the Gemara says, okay, so I'll tell you a different pshat within Reish Lakish, and that is that at that point in time, she's considered like a married woman. Meaning that if now she turns around and marries another man, obviously this marriage terminated and she marries another man. So now what is her ksuva going to be? Her ksuva is going to be a mana. Despite the fact that, let's say it's post-Mesira, but in other words, they never got to the point of chuppah. And obviously she's still a basula. So, but the point now is that according to Reish Lakish, Mesira over here, what effect will it have? It will have an effect in that when she marries another man, the ksuva, her next ksuva is going to be only mana, not masayim. In other words, vis-a-vis her next marriage, she's considered as if she's already she was a married woman. Rav Yochanan, Rabbi Chanina, Dami Tavayu, Lakol, Afla Chuma. And then the Gemara quotes the sheet of Rav Yochanan and Rabbi Chanina, which is that this Mesira creates a full effect of Nisuin, i.e., they're fully married, i.e., he has full responsibilities towards her, and also he has all the Zechuyas by her as well, including that she can even eat Chuma. So, Meisveh, so the Gemara now is going to be challenging. Based on the following braisa, let's go back to our Mishnah. What happens if the father tags along? So we're talking about the Mesira. And then, but upon Mesira, father says, wait 1 second, I am not ready to be out of the picture yet. And literally he comes along. So halacha avim shulchei abal, o shalchu shulchei avim shulchei abal, o. Haisa lachatzer baderech. Or let's say, for example, she had a chatzer on the way. V'nichnesa imo lalin. So and what happens is that they stop over in the chatzar. Afa pi shiksuva sa beveis ba'ala. And even though the ksuva over here does not mean the paperwork, but in other words, all the nedunyas were still handed over to the husband. So, mesa avir yersha. But at that point in time, he has not acquired. Because what has happened, in other words, this is not a full mesira. A full mesira means is that he hands her off and then he goes away. But he didn't hand her off and went away. He handed her off, but he's still there. So, okay, now that part is strange. But no, and the Gemara is going to try to explain that a little bit better. Okay, just wait one moment. Right, we're going to come back to that. So, Masar av l'shulchei abal, Osha Masar shulchei av l'shulchei abal. So, but if the Mesira is a full Mesira, father gave her off to the shlich of the Baal, or gave her off to the... I'm sorry, gave her off to the Baal, or gave her off to the Shlich of the Baal. Oh, Haisa la chatzer, or haisa lo chatzer bederech. Or let's say he had a chatzer. V'nichnaseim alushim nisu and afa pishiksuvasa beveisavia bala yersha. Even though the ksuva, again, the word ksuva over here is a reference to the nedunya. So that's the dowry. And even though all those assets are by the father's house, but over here we're talking now about a mesira, meaning this is a bona fide mesira. Therefore, he's going to be inheriting the nedunya at that point in time. So, Bamed Varim Amorim. Now, this is still the Brisa that we're learning right now. Now, Liyushasa. Avalachuma, Inisha Chalas Bechuma, Achi Tikanas Lechopa. So, but this is only as vis-a-vis Yerusha. This is only in terms of his acquisition of the Nedunya. But vis-a-vis her ability to eat Truma, that's not going to start until actual Chopa. So, Tiyufta, Dekula, Tiyufta. So, the Gemara says, good. So, So anyone who is in disagreement with Shmuel, meaning even though it says Tiyufta Dekulu, this is difficult on everybody, so everybody except for Shmuel, meaning this is pretty much what Shmuel's been saying, is that Mesira is an extraordinarily limited acquisition. What does it do? So Shmuel said that the only thing that it does is it affects transaction Legabi Nedunya. That's it. But in other words, but they're not as if they went under the chuppah. Good. So what happens over here? What happened over here in the Brisa is that this Brisa really is supportive of the Sheet of Shmuel. So Hagufakasha. Now to David's point, which he raised just moments earlier. So Amar Nichnasayim Olalin Taima Delalin Hastama L'Shem Nisuin. So if let's say for example they stop, she has a chatzer, and they stop because they just needed a place to stop. So at that point in time, it is. It doesn't affect anything. However, if let's say it was more than just a stopover, so then it's l'shem nisuin. So imasefa nichnasa imo l'shem nisuin. But then the Brisa confuses us because the Brisa says that it's the l'shem nisuin. So what does that mean? It has to be specifically for the purpose of nisuin. Ha stama lalin. So amar avashi stama stami ketani stam chatzer dida lalin stam chatzer didei. Nisuin. So it depends whose chatzah we're talking about. If it's, let's say, she owns the property and they stop in her property, so that means to say that it doesn't necessarily affect chopa. Chopa is going to be affected when he takes her into his rishus. So if he takes her into his rishus, if the chatzah belongs to him, so then it's for nisuin. If the chatzah belongs to her, it's not necessarily for nisuin. Okay, and to David, to your general point of then what happened over there and doesn't the fact that they were miyachid together, isn't that enough to affect a chuppah? It sounds that way, but it would seem that way, but the Gemara clearly says no. That if it's her chatzer, so that does not affect chuppah. Okay, so
if they had kedushin, that would affect chuppah?
No. This is all post kedushin. This is now the second stage of marriage. We're looking at what exactly is going to be bringing them into the second stage of marriage. Okay, so
you're supposed to see the kallah before you can marry her.
Oh, but in other words,
the Baal never saw her.
So probably what happened over here is that kedushin. Remember, kedushin already happened a year earlier. So at the point of kedushin, so he met her, he saw her, he was happy, he was mekadosh her, and then we're now a year later. We're at the point now of nisuin. Okay, so let's quickly recap our sugya. So far we had a Mishnah. The Mishnah introduces us to this idea of Mesira, right? It's a brand new idea. And it's an interesting idea. And that what we normally have been thinking up until now, which is correct, is that there are two stages of marriage. There's Kedushin, there's Nisuin. And that second stage of marriage is when all the financial obligations kick in and the they live together, husband and wife. What exactly affects Nisuin? So Chuppah affects Nisuin. Okay? That's what we have been working with, and that's what we're going to continue working with. That's the model. However, what the Mishnah has done for us is given us a little bit of a curveball, because the Mishnah over here describes something called Mesira. And that is that when she's handed over, and her being handed over does not mean that she necessarily goes into his house. In other words, that let's say he sends Shlichim in order to collect her, and so she's now handed over to his Shliach, so now that's what's called Mesira. And what does Mesira do? It does something. And then what's open for discussion, which we started yesterday and we just finished now, is that what it does, not clear. The Amoraim debate exactly what Mesira does. And it ranges all the way from it does everything, meaning it's a chuppah equivalent. That's the shita of Rav Asi, and others subscribe to that shita. And oh, by the way, one of those others is Rabbi Yochanan. And Shmuel says no, extraordinarily limited in terms of what it does. The only thing that it does, according to Shmuel, is that it allows him to acquire the nedunya. And that nedunya that was handed over from the father, and even if the father didn't actually physically hand it over, but in other words, committed himself to various assets, and generally speaking, the nedunya was written down. Generally speaking, it was written into the ksuva in terms of what the father actually was going to put into the marriage. And so when does that kinyan occur? So according to Shmuel, it occurs at Mesira. But according to Shmuel, that's it. Nothing else occurs at Mesira. So then according to Shmuel, so when does the second stage of marriage begin? That's an easy It's an easy question to answer. It begins at chuppah, which will occur at a later point in time. Okay.
Did we determine that though? It seems so vague, the actual starting point of the second stage of marriage.
Right.
Yeah,
okay, good. But in other words, but certainly the two of them are together. The two of them are together. It's either under a chuppah or it's in the yichud room. But in other words, they're together. Mesira, they're not together. Mesira, she was just simply handed over. And again, like we said in the Mishnah, not even to him. Even if it's a shlich that picks her up. Now that's what's called Mesira. Okay, good. Let's continue. Tana Masar Av L'Shluch Abal. So, the Gemara now discusses what else may occur at Mesira. So as we already discussed a number of times, so let's just quickly set ourselves up for this next sugya, and that is that if she's Mezana, she commits adultery. So that is a capital offense. She's subject to a death penalty. Which death penalty is she subject to? So normally for a married woman, it's chenek. So, and chenek, as executions go, so that's a milder execution. No, I know that's an oxymoron, milder execution, right? There's no such thing as a mild execution, but nevertheless, it does, right? But we've discussed this time and again, and that is that they are graded, and everything's graded on a curve. They are graded, and chenek is a milder form of execution. But meanwhile, what's on the top of the totem pole of Misa, and that's of course skila. Now I say that, by the way, knowing that there's a machlokas whether or not skila is on top or srefa's on top. But just for the purposes of our discussion, let's set it up that skila is in fact on top. So skila is on the top rung. So that means to say that she's receiving chenek. However, as we already went over a number of times in Parshas Kisetze in Perichav Beis, so we have what's called the Nara Murasa. So Nara Murasa is subject to Skila. If she's a Nara Murasa, which means two things. One is that her maturation stage is that she's an adolescence, halachic adolescence, right? She's older than a Katana, but not yet a Bogeres. And number two, she is only went through Erusin. She didn't go through Nisuin. And so a Nara Marasa, who's Mezana, and remember, as a Narusa, she's a married woman. Therefore, if she has relations with another man, that is an act of adultery. But as a Nara Marasa, she's subject to Skila, not to Chenek. That's Psukim in the Torah. Okay, Hedy asked me already some time ago, why is it that she's going to be receiving Skila? Meaning, what my main adultery, la adultery? What's the difference between one form of adultery and another? Hedy found a Chizkuni. Okay, it's an interesting one, so I'm not going to go through it right now. But the Chizkuni on the Chumash, so he offers a pshat in terms of why it is that her action is a more heinous act of adultery, therefore subject to the skill of punishment. See the Chizkuni over there inside. Meanwhile, well, here's what we're going to now be deliberating for the remainder of this sugya, right, which is going to take us to today's daf, and that is that at the point of Mesira, so now, has she graduated from Skila to Chenek? Okay, I know it's funny, but basically, is she now having a status change where as a Nara Marasa, she'd be subject to Skila? As now a married woman, so she's subject to Chenek. So is Mesira now going to make that change? Tana Masar Av L'Shulcha Baal Zinsa Harei B'Chenek. So the Gemara quotes the Braisa. And the Braisa says, yeah, exactly. Mesira is going to change in that at the point of Mesira now, she's no longer considered just Me'urasa, and now she is going to be Bechenik if she commits adultery. Menani Mili, the Gemara says, okay, and what's the source of this? So Am Rabbi Ami Bar Chama Amakra, Liznos Beis Avia. So if you look in the Psukim, in Kiseitse, in Perichav Beis, so it says that when she's Mezana, Beis Avia, in the house of her father. So Prat, L'Shamasar Av, L'Shulcha Abal. Once she's no longer in the house of the father, so now she moves to being no longer eligible for skila. Now she moves to chenek. So the ema prasha nichnas al chuba velo nivala. So the Gemara says, okay, I hear you, but why can't the pasuk be describing where she leaves her father's house, i.e., she had chuppa with her husband? Why can't we say that? So Amarav, Amar Liami, chuppa bejik siva. So he says, I'll tell you why we can't say that, because we already have a beferish pasuk that describes that scenario. So ki ye na rav esula murasa leish. And here we go, darshaning. Na rav lo bogeris. So again, when is a woman going to be eligible for skila? When, one, to 3 points over here. One, she's a nara, not a bogeris. Two, besula velo beula. She has to be a virgin. Three, ma'orasa velo nesua. And number three is that she has to be ma'orasa, first stage of marriage, not nesua. Now, what does that third point mean? My nesua. Ilem nesua mamish besula velo beula. Now, you think nesua over here means mamish? It can't be, because we already had drasha number two. Drasha number two is that when she moves from being a basula to beula, no longer eligible for skila. So already number two, we talked about her being with her husband. So what does nesua mean? What's point number three? Alav nichnas lechuba v'lo nivala. Oh, okay, fine. So it means that we already have a drasha that tells us that once she's nichnas lechuba, even though bia has not yet occurred, so that is that already moves her from skila to chenek. Now, going back just one more step. So therefore, what is mesira? Ah, so mesira now is what we just darshan. In other words, right, the Rabbi Ami Bar Chama, right? This here you have another example, right? Someone just brought this up. Mitch brought it up that the right Amoraim are darshaning psukim. Like, where do you find Amoraim darshaning psukim? So the answer is you find it. Meaning it's not the norm. The norm is that Tanaim are darshaning psukim, but you have occasions in which Amoraim are darshaning psukim. So when Rabbi Ami Bar Chama is darshaning Luznos Beis Avia, and now that comes to tell me that when she is Beis Avia, she's subject to skila. Once you get to the point of Mesira, which is pre-chuppah, she's now moved from skila to chenek. Ah, so that was his drasha. Why can't you say that's a reference to chuppah? The answer is because we have already established that. I mean, we have other drushas that tell us that taught us about chuppah. So therefore, now we have a drusha available to tell me about Mesira, as we're now on the top of Mem Tesamad Aleph. Ve'ema hecha dehajo lebeinasha hajo lemelsa kamaisa. So the Gemara says, okay, how about this? Is Mesira reversible? Meaning chuppah obviously is irreversible, right? In other words, once she goes into this stage of chuppah, clearly that's an irreversible act. Is Mesira something which is reversible? So Amarava ha-hu kvar paska. So Sarava says, no, this matter was already discussed. Tan de Beir Rabbi Shmuel, de Tan de Beir Rabbi Shmuel, v'neder amana grusha kol asher asra nafsha yakum alaha. Okay, and we're going to go back to Parshas Matos, and we're going to be discussing Nedarim. Now, within the world of Nedarim, so we know that either a husband or a father can be mefer the Nedarim of his wife, daughter, right? Depending on whether we're talking about a husband or a father. Okay, and the pasuk goes on to say, but if she's an aman, if she's a widow, or she's a grusha, or she's a divorcee, so no one's there to be made for her neder. And therefore, she makes a neder, the neder is going to sustain. Now, ma'atam alam revalam mutzis mechla v'mutzis mechla ba'al. Now, the pasuk seems to be totally unnecessary. Meaning, if she's divorced or if she's widowed, there's just simply no address. Who's going to be made for her neder? She doesn't have a father, halachically. She doesn't have a husband. Okay, so why does the Torah have to go out of its way and tell me that if she's an aman or if she's a grusha, so now any neder that she makes is going to sustain? So el arei shemaser av l'shulchei abal, o shemaser shulchei av l'shulchei abal. So over here, so what's the pasuk intimating? What is it referring to? Mesira. In other words, once she is been handed over, v'nisarim la b'derech u'niskar sheheich anikore ba beveis avia shel zu o beis bala shel zu. So at that point in time, if after we're post Mesira, but now either she becomes widow or divorced post Mesira, obviously pre chuppah. So Ella Lama Lacha Kevin Shiyatza Shach as Mirshas Av Shoven Yachola Hafir. So what do we see? That Mesira basically cuts her off from the father vis a vis Nedarim, and even if post Mesira but pre chuppah she becomes widow or divorced, she no longer goes back to her father. So to the question of Is Mesira reversible? The answer is unequivocally no. It's irreversible.
Is Kiddushin reversible?
No, of course not.
So then what's the point? She's already Kiddushin to their husband.
Because with Kiddushin, so that's only Erusin. Erusin does not remove her from the jurisdiction of her father. Her father still has every opportunity and ability to be made for her neder. Mesira now brings her to that second stage of marriage, where now that cuts her off from her father. In other words, up until today's daf, what I would have told you, and I probably would have been incorrectly confident about it, is that what removes her from her father is chuppah. That's what I would have told you. Good. And now what today's daf is introducing us to, really yesterday and today's daf, is that there's this thing called Mesira. You don't have to do Mesira. There's no mitzvah to do Mesira. But Mesira now is a chuppah equivalent to the point where it cuts her off from her father. Amar Rav Papa. We are continuing. We're in Mem Tesem Ad Aleph. Amar Rav Papa af anan nami tanina. Abal nara marasa. So all we're going to do now is that we're going to point to the Mishnah that's going to make effectively the same point. That Mesira becomes irreversible. So, Habal Nara Marasa, Eno Chai Vachete Nara Besula Marasa, Vibeve Savia. So, Nara Marasa, eligible for Skila. So, she's going to be three things. Again, Nara Besula Marasa. So, Bishlama Nara Velo Bagaris Besula Velo Beula Marasa Velo Nesua. So, the 3 points which we already covered earlier this morning. Good. We know it. We got it. Now, Besavia. But here in this Brisa, so it actually introduces us to a fourth point. And that is that when is she subject to skila? When she's beves avia. So the Gemara says, what is that a reference to? Lamute mai, lav lamute, masar av l'shulchei abal. So you know what beves avia is coming to tell me? That's all before Mesira. Once Mesira occurs, she's no longer beves avia. I'm Rav Nachman Yitzchak Afad Namitan Ina. We're going to do this one more round. And that is, abal ish ish, kev shenichnas l'rishos abal nisuin, afa pishol nivala, habal la'ari zibachenek. So with that, when a woman commits adultery, but she is now, she goes into the Rishus Abal, she now is no longer subject to Skila, but rather Chenek. So Nechnas al Rishus Abal Ba'ama, so in other words, just the Rishus HaBaal. The Rishus Abal, how are we understanding that now? Okay, good. So everyone here knows, we all know the answer. Mesira. Meaning Mesira now takes her and puts her into the Rishus Abal. So Shmamina. Okay, so the Gemara says fine. So that concludes our discussion regarding Mesira. So there were two big topics that were covered within the world of Mesira. Number one, what kind of effect does Mesira have? Is it a full chuppah equivalent or partial? Machlokas Amarayim, right? The Gemara did not take a position in terms of who the halacha follows, but that's one. And then number two, is it reversible? The Gemara's conclusion is that it becomes irreversible. Whatever it effects, it's an irreversible effect. Okay. The next mission that we're going to go through here in the fourth parak of Ksuvos is going to be a discussion regarding father's support of his children. Okay. There is a mitzvah for a parent to support his children. But we're not here for mitzvahs right now. I know that's funny, learning the daf. What we are here to discuss is chovah. We're now going to be discussing obligations. Is there an obligation for a father to support his children? I say support right now. We're principally talking about food. Okay, so is there a obligation for a father to support his children? And the answer is no. Okay, and that answer shouldn't come as a shock because you've heard me say that before. And what about a 1-year-old? What about a 2-year-old? So the answer is yes, but for an interesting reason, and that is because that we know that a husband is obligated to support his wife. That is a obligation. That's what's called tanai ksuva. Okay, and so when a husband's obligated to support his wife, and she has really young children up to the age of 6, we're going to establish that later in the mesechta. So up until the age of 6, so those children are viewed basically as extensions of her. In other words, they need her. They are absolutely dependent on her. Physically dependent on her. And so therefore, the obligation for the father to support really young children, right? Kitne ketanim, right? That's the term the Gemara later on is going to use. So there is an obligation the father has, but only because he's obligated to support his wife and feed his wife. And right now she's nursing. And right back in the day, nursing went on for, you know, more than just whatever. They nursed for a longer time back then. So for that, he's obligated to support his really young children. Okay, but now they're over 6 years of age. Is he obligated to support them? The answer is no. Okay. Is there a mitzvah for him to do so? Yes. Social pressure, we'll talk about that later this morning. Yes. But obligation? So no. No obligation. And certainly after Bar Bas Mitzvah, there's really nothing to talk about. Okay, now, everything I said is correct, but obviously, in other words, the societal norms have changed, and it's certainly, in other words, there's certainly there's an ethical discussion to be had. But I say ethical, meaning even within the context of halacha. But I'm right now here for the Gemara, meaning what we are here together to do is to learn the daf. And in order to understand the Mishnah, so we all need to know that basic fact. Up until six, there's an obligation, but only really the obligation is just an extension of you have to support your wife. From six and above, no obligation. And certainly from Bar and Bas Mitzvah and beyond, zero. Good. With all that stated, so now we're ready to do a Mishnah. Okay. Mishnah starts off, Avi Nochai B'Mezonos Bito. So a father is not obligated to support his daughter. So again, we're talking about children now that are above 6 years of age. Okay, that's the assumption. Now it says daughter over here. We daughter to the exclusion of son. So we're going to clarify that a little bit later on. Sorry. And the following was darshened by Rav Elazar ben Azariah and Kerem B'Yavneh. The Gemara and Brachos, which we all know, and that the Rav Elazar ben Azariah was appointed the new Nasi, right? Rabbi Gamliel was deposed. I'm making a long story really short, and Rav Elazar ben Azariah took over. Okay, that's called a long story made short. So on that day in which he took over, so a number of things were established and determined, and one of them was the following, and that is Abanim Yeshuv Abanus Yizonu. Ma Abanim Ena Yoshem El Alachem Isas Avav Abanus Ena Yizonus El Alachem Isas Aviyam. And look. The sons are going to inherit. The sons are going to inherit. Now, this is a reference to Ksuvos Ben Endichrin, and here's what I'll do for today. And that is, I'll take a pass on explaining Ksuvos Ben Endichrin, because there will be many opportunities upcoming in the Masechta where I'm going to explain this a lot better than right now. But for our purposes right now, there is an institution of what's called Ksuvos Ben Endichrin. If you know what it is, great. And if you don't know what it is, so come back again, please. Okay? And I'm going to explain it better later on. But anyway, but the sons inherit Ksuvos Ben Endichrin. Good. And the daughters are going to be supported. And now what Rav Elazar ben Azariah is noting is, take these two takanas, put them side by side, and here now is where they compare. Here's where they match. Do you know when the sons inherit Ksuvos Ben Endichrin? After the father dies. Do you know when the daughters are going to be supported? After the father dies. Meaning the only time that the daughters are obligated to be supported is after the death of the father. Why? I'll tell you why. Because what happens to his estate after he dies? So it goes to his sons, and exclusively to his sons. So now, if he has daughters, so now they no longer have a father, and they're not yet married, and so who's going to support them? And the answer is going to be the Tanai Ksuva is going to support them. The estate is going to support them, and this is part of the contracted agreement of the Ksuva. This is what's called, again, Tanai Ksuva, that daughters are in fact going to be supported, but only after the father dies.
But they weren't supported before the father
dies. Correct. Absolutely correct. That's accurate. So b'mizonos bito hu deinu chayiv, ha b'mizonos beno chayiv. So we're going to make now a couple of what seems to be simple diukim in the Mishnah. So number one, so he's not obligated to support his daughters, but he's obligated to support his sons. So bito nami, and also another deacon in the Mishnah is not obligated to support his daughters, but certainly it's a mitzvah. It's ideal that he does so. So mani masis and lo rabbi meir v'lo rabbi yehuda v'lo rabbi yochum and broka. Now that makes the author of our Mishnah who? Unclear. Really unclear. Meaning first let's lay out the principal positions. There are three of them. Detanya we learned in a braisa. Mitzvah lazonos abanos v'kavachom labanim. So there is a mitzvah to support daughters and certainly sons. To ask about Torah, Divrei Rabbi Meir. Now, why is there more of an argument that you have to support sons? Because your sons have an obligation to learn Torah. And therefore what? Therefore, They are in terms of a time commitment. So they are straddled with the requirement to go and learn Torah, and so therefore that's going to take them away from earning, and so therefore father is recommended to go ahead and to support daughters and certainly sons, according to the Shita Rameir. Now again, you got to listen carefully to whether it's recommended or obligated, mitzvah or chova. So, Rabbi Yehuda Amar mitzvah zonas zabanim v'kavachom alabanus mishum zilusa. Now, Rabbi Yehuda seems to be saying effectively the same thing. He just starts off with recommended to support your sons and certainly your daughters, because obviously it's degrading for young women to go around asking for money. Now, it's certainly, when all said and done, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda seem to be saying the same thing. Hold that thought. Rabbi Yochanan Broka Omer Chov Alazonos Abanos Lachem Mises Aviem Ava Bechay Aviem Elav Elo Einan Izonim. So Rabbi Yochanan Broka says is that, you know, when there's an obligation to support daughters after the father has died. After the father has died, and now we're looking at an estate. And again, Tanaik Suva requires that the estate support the daughters, but only after the father dies, but while the father's alive. So then it's not an obligation, certainly not an obligation, and it's not even an ideal. It's not even a mitzvah, according to Rav Yochanan Ben Broka. So then, now that we know the three principal positions of Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rav Yochanan Ben Broka, so now Mani Mas Nisan. So who is the author of our Mishnah? So we're going to strike out one, Rabbi Meir. So you think our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Meir, Ha'amar, Banim Mitzvah. So Rabbi Meir says is that when it comes to Banim, it's a mitzvah. Okay. So, and our Mishnah clearly is making a delineation between daughters and sons. And E, Rabbi Yehuda, Hamar, Banim, Nami, Mitzvah. And if you're telling me that's Rabbi Yehuda also says that sons are a mitzvah. And again, that doesn't sound like our Mishnah. And Rabbi Yochanan Ben Broka, Afila Mitzvah, Nami, Leika. Now, according to Rabbi Yochanan Ben Broka, there's not even a mitzvah to do so, which certainly does not sound like our Mishnah. So that's called striking out, right? Our Mishnah is not going neither like Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, nor Rabbi Yochanan Ben Broka. That strikes 1, 2, and 3. Now, it can't be. Meaning, if we have three principal positions and we have an anonymous Mishnah, what we're not going to do is that we're not going to say, well, our Mishnah represents another opinion. Our plate is full already. We already got three opinions. In other words, the Mishnah's got to mesh, right? The general idea of conservation of positions, meaning we're not going to manufacture another position if we don't have to. So over here, we're going to assume that our Mishnah is holding like one of these three positions. It's now just a question of which one. So, okay, so with a little bit of work and effort, so what we're going to do is that we will insert one of the positions. So, top of the Amud Beis. Okay. So, in other words, I know our Mishnah points to Bito, but the truth of the matter is that the Mishnah over here is a reference to Bito, and it's a reference to Beno as well. I might have thought that Bito's a Chova. That's why the Mishnah says Bito, to tell me that it's not a Chova, but it's a Mitzvah. But Bito, v'hu adim Beno. Okay, you have a recommendation, a strong recommendation to support son and daughter, but it's not an obligation. And that's how our Mishnah could be going like Rabbi Meir. V by same Rabbi Yehuda v'achikamar havinu chayv b'mezonos bito v'kol shekin lebeno ha-mitzvah b'vno ika v'kavachomer lebanos v'hadik tani bito ha-kamashan da'afilo bito chov aleikam. Effectively, for Rabbi Yehuda, we're going to do the same thing. In other words, I know the Mishnah says bito, but it means beno as well. Again, strong recommendation to go and support the two of them. The Mishnah only said bito. Yeah, because Bito is a recommendation, but not an obligation. And E by Semer Rav Yochanan Ben Broka v'Achi Kamar Einu Chay B'Mezonos Bito v'Huadin Livno v'Huadin Dafila Mitzvah Nami Leika. And again, I'm going to read the Mishnah now like Rav Yochanan Ben Broka. The Mishnah says that it is not a it's not a mitzvah. I'm sorry, it's not an obligation. And I will add now again, the Mishnah doesn't say this. We're reading this into the Mishnah. And it's not a mitzvah. V'u'adin da'afilu mitzvah nami leka. V'aydid abanus la'achar mitzvah zavim chova tana nami enu chayev. Why is the Mishnah, why are we hearing the words chayev enu chayev? Because what we're contrasting is, after the father dies, before your father died. After the father died, chova. That's why the Mishnah said before the father died, ain't a chova. But just for symmetrical purposes. But the truth of the matter is that before the father's dead, or let's say better, while the father's alive, so then nothing. Not an obligation, not even a recommendation. Okay. Amar Rabbi Eli, Amar Reish Lakish Mishum Rabbi Huda Bar Chanina Be'ushit Kenushi Adam Zanis Benav Vizbenosav Kishem Kitanim. Okay, so now, we have three opinions in terms of the support that a father must provide for his children, sons, daughters. And again, we are certainly after 6 years of age, there's no obligation. We could say that. It's correct. It's accurate. Okay. And then we can also now say that whether or not it's a mitzvah, it's recommended. So we now also know that it's subject to a machlokas tanaim. According to Rav Meir, according to Rav Yehuda, mitzvah. To support them after they're 6 years of age. But not an obligation. And according to Rav Yochanan ben Broka, not even a mitzvah. Okay. That is step number two. Now we're up to step number three. Takana Susha. So let's start this right now, but we'll finish this up tomorrow. And that is that there was an institution in Usha. What is Usha? Usha is the name of a town. And it's where the Sanhedrin went after Chorm Baisheni. After the destruction of the second base of Mikdash, so the Sanhedrin was sent into Galus. And they moved from one Galus to another Galus, if I'm not mistaken, 10 Galios in total that they were sent to. One of the stops on the way was a town of Usha. Geographically, right? You probably know. It's near Yerushalayim?
Tveria.
Oh, near Tveria. Okay. You're right. Okay, fine. So I know, right, eventually, ultimately, they made it up north, right? Tveria was the last stop on the way. So anyway, so the town of Usha, a number of institutions were made in Usha. Okay. I'm sure there's a good reason why. I don't know. But but Usha became a place where the Sanhedrin made a number of institutions, this being one of them. And that is, Hitkino, the institution, Shia Adam Zanis Banav is Benosav Kshem Ketanim Ibailu, Hilchasa Kavase, O Ein Hilchasa Kavase. Now, this Takanas Usha, has it been codified? Is it accepted halacha? So what the Gemara now is going to do is, and we'll start this now, but we're really going to finish this tomorrow, is that we're going to attempt to prove whether or not this is something which is absolutely accepted, this institution that was done in Usha. So Tashma Kiyava Sol Kama to Rav Yehuda. So somebody came to Rav Yehuda, in other words, a court case of Rav Yehuda. Support for the children. So Amar Lehu Yaro Yalda Va B'nei Masa Shadya. So Rav Yehuda, so he gave strong reprimand to the parent who was refusing to support his child. And he said the following, Yaro Yalada, Yaro over here with an aleph, not with an ayin. So it's a type of snake, it's a type of serpent. Okay. Yeah. Rashi calls it a tanin. Okay.
You need to take care of it.
So he gives birth, and what happens is that now you're putting the responsibility, the financial responsibility on the community. So basically what he did is that he gave him a lot of pressure, but that's it. In other words, that's all he did. In other words, but he didn't say that you're obligated to do so. Okay. The Gemara says, I'll give you another one. So what you're going to do basically is get out your soapbox, and I'm saying that almost literally. Okay, it's right. Go to the center of the town. Take your soapbox, put it down on the ground, step on top of it, and make the following announcement. You know, ravens take care of their children, and this guy over here is not ready to take care of his child. So, and again, what are we hearing right now? Social pressure, but that's it. In other words, now that's not nothing, by the way. That's obviously that's significant. But in other words, right. But you can't force him to do so. So, okay. And then the Gemara just gets a little bit sidetracked for a moment. Vorva by Bana. Ravens really take care of the young. Vaksiv, right? The Pasuk in Tehillim, we're all familiar. Livne Orev, Asher Yikra'u. So the Akash Baruch Hu takes care of everyone. And the Bnei Orev, the children of ravens, so they're calling out to Kadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, because no one's taking care of them. So the Gemara says, Lokasha habechivri habeuchme. Okay, depends on whether or not they're white, they're black. See Rashi over here for an explanation of why it is there's a difference between white ravens, black ravens. Okay. I don't, if you'll forgive me, I don't want to get too sidetracked. Oh, that's an important point. But anyway, so, Anusha, there was an institution. The question is that how much did it make it into enforced legislation? And what we're hearing now, after two case studies is the Amoraim were not ready to actually force this legislation, but rather it was, pressure was put on the father to support his children, but that's it. Okay. And we'll pause over here at this point in time, right? There are going to be more discussion regarding, Takanas Usha. Let's quickly recap today. Okay. Our first discussion today has been revolving around Mesira. So what did we learn together? That Mesira is definitely a transfer. In other words, what brings a woman from Erisin to Nisuin is Chuppah. That's clear. However, what we were introduced to between yesterday's daf and today's daf is this idea of Mesira. That once she is Nimsar from Beis Avia to Beis Baala, even though she didn't enter into Beis Baala, but that Mesira in of itself now becomes significant. How significant? Okay, so that's yesterday's daf and today's daf. Machlokus Amarayim. We range all the way from Rav Asi, who says that's a Mesira Gemura. She is now bona fide. She is absolutely a Nesua, to the point where she can even eat Truma. So, and Rav Yochanan sides with the Rav Asi. And on the other side, you have Shmuel. And Shmuel says it's extraordinarily limited. According to Shmuel, the only thing that it affects is the Nedunya, is that the dowry that was written into the Ksuva, where her father promises these assets that are going to go into the marriage, so that's going to be affected at Mesira, and that's it, nothing else. And where did the Gemara land on this issue? And the Machlokas. The Gemara landed on, this is subject to a Machlokas Amarayim. And then the other big discussion that we had regarding Mesira is that when does she go from being a Bas Skila to a Bas Chenek? So is that going to be occurring at Mesira? And the answer seems to be yes. In other words, by Mesira, so if Znus were to occur post Mesira, pre Chuppah, so then she goes from, her punishment is going to be Chenek, not Skila. Reversible, irreversible, right? That's the last point regarding Mesira. It's an irreversible act. And finally, our big discussion for the remainder of this morning has been a father's obligation to support his children. Again, kitne ketanim. So yes, he's obligated to do so. Obligated up until 6 years of age. From six and upward. So is he obligated? Unequivocally, the answer is no. Is it a mitzvah to do so? That's subject to a debate. And then takanas usha. And then the discussion that we had for the remainder of today's daf did it become enforceable legislation, takanas usha? And what it sounds so far is no, but to be continued.